In December 2019, then-candidate Joe Biden joined six other presidential hopefuls in Pittsburgh for an MSNBC forum on all things education, including the debate over standardized testing. Denisha Jones, a professor and director in the art of teaching program at Sarah Lawrence College, asked Biden this.
Given that standardized testing is rooted in a history of racism and eugenics, if you are elected president, will you commit to ending the use of standardized testing in public schools?
Yes.
You heard that. Biden did not hesitate. Yes, he said. And then he elaborated. Teachers, Biden said, don't need standardized tests to know how their students are doing.
I'm not saying every teacher is a great teacher. What I am saying is, you know what it takes to communicate to a child what, in fact, they need to know.
Again, that was December 2019. And then, of course, came the pandemic. By late March 2020, governors nationwide temporarily closed schools. Eventually, 48 states, 4 U.S. territories, and the District of Columbia all recommended keeping school buildings closed for the rest of the academic year. Quite simply, that has never happened before. More than 50 million public school students felt the massive impact. Now, a lot of these kids are back in school buildings at the moment, but not all. This spring, mindful of the disruption, state education leaders asked the Biden administration for a waiver from those federally mandated end-of-year standardized tests. And then the Biden administration said no. States could delay the tests, but they cannot cancel them. Here's Secretary of Education Miguel Cardona on PBS NewsHour just last night.
When we're talking about addressing achievement disparities, there's some difficult decisions we have to make. And one of them is making sure that we do everything in our power to assess which students have been affected and how much they've been affected so that the policies and the resources that are coming out of the American Rescue Plan can be aimed at those students that need it most.
Secretary Cardona echoed Biden's line from back in December 2019, but with a twist.
There's no teacher in the country that needs a standardized assessment to tell them how their students are doing. But in order for policymakers and state leaders to make sure that the funding goes to those students that were impacted the most, every bit of data helps. This is not the end all, but it's definitely going to be helpful in order to make good policies and make sure that the resources go to those students who are affected most.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point, and the debate over federal standardized testing is a long and very well-worn road. But as we've been saying for more than a year now, the pandemic is a mirror, right? So today, we're going to ask if the pandemic might have presented the nation with an opportunity to reshape the debate over standardized testing in public education. Not just testing good or testing bad, but what's the purpose of these tests? Is it worth making any measurement of student learning this year? And in the future, what do we really want to know? What do we really want to measure to help American students succeed in the modern world? That's what we're going to talk about today. And we're going to start with Laura Jimenez, Director of Standards and Accountability at the Center for American Progress. She was also a special assistant in the Office of Elementary and Secondary Education, education at the U.S. Department of Education during the Obama administration. Laura, welcome to On Point.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
And, you know, just as a mark of how important teachers are in students' lives, every time I stumble over a word, I know my third grade teacher listens from Florida. So, Mrs. Fuque, I'm sorry that I screwed it up. She was very precise about language and a very important person in my life. But so, first of all, let's get some nuts and bolts here. What specifically has the Biden administration said about not allowing states to cancel or waive standardized testing this year?
Yes. So in February, they issued a letter to state school chiefs saying that the requirement to annually assess all students in reading and math in grades 3 through 8 and once in high school, that requirement would not be waived. However, states could apply for waivers of accountability, which uses different sources of data to measure how well schools are performing. And amongst those measures, how well they are doing in achieving this state's learning standards in reading and math.
Okay. So that's for states. But if I understand correctly, Washington, D.C. did get a waiver.
Yes, Washington, D.C. did get a waiver. The letter did say that the department was willing to entertain some states' requests for additional flexibility, and they outlined three different kinds of flexibility. For example, shortening the test, giving that test later, or giving it remotely. And the letter also said, depending on the state's circumstances, reach out to us and let's have a discussion about, you know, what your needs would be. And DC is a pretty unique state in that most of the students are still remote. It's over 80%, which is very different than many other states who have been going back to school for some months now. Most of those students are still remote, and under those conditions, the state did not think that it was feasible to give the assessment because it didn't have the ability to do so remotely.
Interesting. Okay. So you heard that tape from Secretary Cardona a minute or two ago, and he seemed to be pointing to the fact that the federal government would need the data generated by the test quite simply to parcel out funds, that there was a very, very kind of basic equation here, that without the data, they wouldn't know how to put out the federal funding from the American Rescue Plan. Is it as simple as that?
Not quite. So there's a couple of things to consider. One, the money is largely going to follow how Title I, which is a federal funding program to provide supplementary resources to schools that serve low-income students. It's largely going to follow that formula. However, at the state level, they can additionally target those funds, and within the districts particularly, additionally target those funds to the schools that need it most. And that's really where that data would become really important to help target which schools have greater needs.
Okay. Let's hear from an on-point listener from Southern Oregon. This is a teacher from Southern Oregon. In addition to the pandemic, they had terrible wildfires at the start of their school year there. And here's what the teacher told us.
I understand the place for testing for sure. Absolutely respect the need for it. But I think this year, under the circumstances with the pandemic and the difficulty we're having with getting through all of the standards each year, it's a lot to ask of our students and families. And if you add our wildfires on top of that, it's just too much.
So, Laura Jimenez, I mean, we've been hearing a lot along this line that really it's just not going to be a really accurate measure other than a measure of all the disruption that students have been experiencing for the past year.
Mm-hmm. So the state assessment is the only test, one that is made for all students to be able to participate. Federal law requires that the test is designed so that students who are English learners, students who have disabilities, who are among the most vulnerable in our student population, can participate in that test. Now, other tests that schools use do not have those accommodations. So any data that we have right now that is looking at how students are faring, and we do have a couple of data pieces that have been put out by researchers, they're limited because they don't measure the performance of all students. So that's one important thing to consider. The other important thing to consider is that of those data pieces that have been put out on local assessments are showing that so far the losses are maybe not as great as we expected, with a huge asterisk. One, millions of students are missing from the data because they don't take the test or they're not going to school. And when you disaggregate that data, when you analyze it by different student groups, low-income students and the most vulnerable students are showing tremendous losses. The other thing to note is that these assessments are not necessarily based on the state's learning standards in reading and math. So when you put all of that together, I do think that when students do take an assessment, we are going to see pretty grave consequences for those vulnerable students in terms of learning loss. And that's why it's important to measure.
But how is that different than any other year, other than the same patterns being wildly exacerbated by the pandemic and the impact that being physically out of school had on kids?
Well, you know, we just don't quite know exactly what the data are going to show. But I think what we're seeing in the data we've seen so far is that those learning losses are going to be greater than we've seen in the past. And that is, the achievement gap is going to grow. Rather than sort of stay steady over time, which is what a lot of the data points are showing, I think we're going to see a widening of that gap.
So then I guess I'm going to just repeat the question and forgive me for doing so, but it's just a continuation of a pattern that we've long understood in this country. Is it not? And it's an exacerbated continuation.
It's an exacerbated continuation, absolutely. But I think the other thing to keep in mind is that the state test should just be one data point. It mm-hmm. shouldn't be the only data point that we pay attention to. For example, we know that students are without broadband access. They are without devices to even be able to log into virtual schooling. We know that they have suffered tremendous losses due to, family members who have lost their lives to COVID, or family members or their parents who have lost their jobs. They are, you know, food insecure, home insecure. And we have to look at the test results within that entire context to really understand the gravity.
Well, we're getting a lot of feedback online from On Point listeners. One listener says, aren't situations like this exactly why standardized testing was created, especially if you're using them as a measuring stick for who fell behind during most remote learning? How to distribute resources is an important question. We should use every tool available. Whereas another listener says, there are some tests where teachers don't even get the results up to a year. They admit behind closed doors they don't look at the scores. There's no data justification in this case. We'll have a lot more when we come back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this hour we're talking about federally mandated standardized testing in public schools across this country and whether the pandemic has given us an opportunity to really rethink the old debate over standardized testing. I'm joined today by Laura Jimenez. She's Director of Standards and Accountability at the Center for American Progress, former Special Assistant in the Office of Elementary and Secondary Education while in the Obama administration. Now, we have been hearing a lot from On Point listeners about this question. Here's Cynthia Gallis, a listener from Fairhope, Alabama.
I believe that the standardized testing should be done in each and every state this year. We need to know exactly where our children stand educationally in this pandemic. As their education moves through the years, this will be a base for us to learn from and understand.
And here's listener Jane Gary in Columbia, South Carolina. She says she left her job as an English teacher because the testing got to be too much. She's a mother, too, and says her daughter, typically a strong student, has hit a pandemic wall.
If me as an educator at home with her, because I'm working from home, was having a difficult time keeping her caught up and just on top of things, if we were struggling as a family, it's just no surprise that so many other families without the type of resources and the educational background and leg up that we had, there's just no point to me in having standardized testing this year.
Well, I'd like to bring into the conversation now Prudence Carter. She's dean and professor at the Graduate School of Education at the University of California, Berkeley, author of Keeping It Real, School Success Beyond Black and White. Dean Carter, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, first of all, respond to what you heard actually, On Point listener Cynthia there say, and it echoes what Laura had been saying in the previous segment. The assertion that, in fact, because of the pandemic and because of the massive disruption in the lives of American students, that this year more than ever, understanding how big that disruption has been is vitally important. And the way to do that, or one of the key ways to do that, is through standardized testing. What's your response to that?
Well, I believe that we have a massive problem of redundancy. We risk expending resources in the country on a problem that we already know exists and that has been mentioned here, that this testing under these extraordinary conditions just compound the inequities we already know to exist and the disparities in terms of testing across different social classes and racial and ethnic groups. So for me, that's one problem, is whether or not that's the best utilization of resources. The second question is whether or not these tests are actually sufficiently aligned with teaching practice. One of the things that came up in my own district with my own child in his classroom as they tried to test last semester was that the teacher herself admitted that whatever she learned from the test was not adequately aligned with her pedagogical practice. And so a number of us, as a result, decided to opt out of testing and choose a different diagnostic that would be more aligned with how she could teach our children in order to keep them on track if we cared about that, or in order to enhance their learning over the course of being remote and for the rest of the year. So there is a larger question of alignment as well.
Okay, so I could just jump in here, because that's a really interesting point that we hadn't discussed before. So just to be clear, you're saying that some of the standardized tests, I guess because they had been written before the pandemic, simply aren't, they don't match how teaching has been done or had to have been done over the course of the pandemic. So it's not even it's not a good measure that way.
Well, for many teachers, it has, even prior to the pandemic, are these tests, although they are supposed to be aligned with state standards, are these tests really signaling to us what we need to do and can translate more effectively and concretely in our teacher practice? So one of the things that I did was to actually go and to take a sample of a test at my son's level to see what they were testing him on. And I knew immediately that he, as an upper middle class African-American child, was probably not going to test well on how they were questioning him. And it was to ascertain his reading level. But the diagnostic that his teacher was giving him, on the other hand, could tell me what skills we needed to work on specifically to enhance and improve his reading. So in some ways, I believe these tests, and to be perfectly honest and full disclosure, I realize that they're a reliability and validity test and that assessment experts design these. But it's also a business. It's also, I am not convinced as a researcher that they are the most reliable indicators of what teachers need to do to help our children.
Well, let me get Laura Jimenez to respond to that, especially since there seems to be this assertion that the data is going to tell us, or is aimed, hopefully will tell us something important this year. You hear Dean Carter saying that we may not even be able to trust what the data say.
Sure. So the issue with the discussion around standardized testing is that it focuses solely on one assessment. And we know that teachers need four types of assessments to guide them throughout their practice. They need diagnostic assessments that will tell them where their students are starting from in relation to day one of a lesson. So what is that gap and what do they need, and points the way to what they need to do to get students ready to learn. Then there are formative assessments that are measuring along the way to guide those daily interactions between the teacher and her students. Then there are interim assessments that tell you at the end of a unit what a student learned. And then there's the annual summative assessment that evaluates the learning over the course of the year. That's what we refer to as a balanced system of assessments, which is really what we need and we just don't have in this country. Now, the doctor is right in that we also need an alignment of the curriculum with the assessments and with the standards. And currently that's not the case. We often have assessments that aren't quite aligned with the curriculum and they're not quite aligned with the standards. And so you're getting different messages about what students should be learning.
Mm-hmm. So I want to just for a second stay focus uniquely on the fact of the pandemic and what it did to or is doing to American school children, because I still am so, I'm not shocked, but just so taken by the fact that we have literally never in this country had a moment in time where most kids were out of school, physically out of school buildings. That's a fact. We haven't dealt with that before. And coming along with that, the pandemic is the reason why we have these major pieces of legislation that came out of Washington that have tons of money associated with them in order to help people deal with the fallout from the COVID pandemic. So there are just some like very basic concrete things that have to happen, right? The federal government does need some kind of tools. That's what Secretary Cardona was talking about, in order to understand how to fairly and effectively parcel out more than $100 billion to states and districts across this country. So, Dean Carter, are there other tools available to the federal government to do that effectively, or is testing still the primary way?
I am fully aware that we want uniformity and standardization across 50 state systems so that we can ascertain how to do and allocate resources fairly. The problem for me is the logic is flawed under these extraordinary global pandemic conditions. It's a potential waste of resources when we already know that opportunity gaps engender achievement gaps or achievement disparities. And I wonder, to go to a larger philosophical issue, even if it's legal, even if we want to standardize and understand, does it mean that it's either just or humane for our students? And I think that's a larger question. We have experienced collective trauma under this pandemic. We have so many children whose families have lost employment, their housing insecure, their food insecure. I mean, there are many who have disappeared from the system. Mm-hmm. How fundamentally fair is it to test them? Why not scaffold, infuse resources, since we know that it's most likely that the disparities will largely track what we already see in Title I allocations and Title I schools, where there's large disadvantage. We also know that this pandemic has adversely affected many middle and upper middle income students in public schools, too, most likely. So in one way, we would want to understand how there has been, in some ways, some recession in learning. If you want to, people call it learning loss. I have a hard time with that because children have learned so many other things. So that raises another question of whether or not the tests are actually picking up other skills that our kids may have acquired in terms of resilience under a pandemic.
Yeah, point well taken. We're going to talk more about sort of what tests are measuring versus what they should be measuring, perhaps. But if I might press a little, if not standardized testing, like say the Biden administration had said, okay, we're going to allow states to waive their federally mandated tests for this year. I mean, I hear your point about fairness to students, but I mean, it's also there's the possibility of millions of dollars coming to those same students' districts with the information that comes from the tests. So what other means do you think the Biden administration ought to be using to figure out how to spend that money? I mean, we keep talking about resources in education, and here the federal government is poised to pour resources into districts, but they have to have a means by which to do that. So what would you recommend?
So are they pouring the resources into large test-taking companies, or will those resources really reach down at the very micro level into the classrooms to affect positively teaching practice to make sure that students have also the other things that they need to learn? And so we know that individualized tutoring, there have been some studies that have shown that that worked. Will there be sufficient one to scale in terms of resources? Let me answer your question more directly. Mm. I am not suggesting that we don't test. I'm not an anti-tester. What I worry about is the extent to which we utilize tests for high stakes. We know that communities are already suffering. And so why not allocate those resources in a way fairly that we've already tracked in terms of disadvantage in schools across states in this country? We also could have a dashboard. Some states already have multiple indicators of what school success and school student success would look like. But here's the third thing. So test, will you get good data? There's likely to be a large self-selection bias. There's likely to be a lot of students who will just not take the test. They will disappear from the test. There's likely to be opting out. So what does it tell us? Bad data is not necessarily useful data. Will it be? So that's the, I'm concerned about that. But if that's how we want to utilize federal resources, then be prepared for the other side for us not to have been the most effective and actually forward thinking. Mm-hmm. And so there's sufficient warning now.
Laura Jimenez, do you want to respond to what Dean Carter was saying? Let's start with the last point that she made. Again, the question of, like, it may be bad data that these tests generate.
Yeah, so I think there were just a number of issues that were conflated there. There's the test itself, and then there's how the test results are used, you know, which what she referred to as the high stakes. So the department has already said that states are invited to waive the accountability requirements. So the test results do not have to be used, nor should they. I agree with that point. They should not be used to hold schools accountable. So let's take that issue off the table. In terms of the federal money paying for these tests have been paid for with state funds prior. So the $130 billion isn't going to be used for states' testing programs because they've already been contracted out. And then the third thing about bad data, well, students missing from the data, that is a data point. That's something that we should definitely be paying attention to. And the data will be a valid measurement of the state standard because that is how the test is designed. And again, because the test is not going to be used for accountability purposes, it doesn't have to meet that high technical standard it normally does. Mm.
You know, both of you have actually said something. There's an area of agreement here. Both of you said we already know what districts struggle and where the gaps are. They existed prior to the pandemic. I'm curious, Laura, why that information isn't enough to assist the federal government in knowing how to parcel out funds related to aiding districts because of the pandemic.
So I'm not willing to say that the data is just going to confirm existing gaps. Mm-hmm. I'm curious to know whether the gaps have grown and where and for whom.
And Dean Carter, what do you think about that?
I am less interested in gap discourse, trafficking and reproducing these kind of damaging narratives. I'm more interested in the most effective allocation of those resources. And because we, prior to the pandemic, we already had disparities that we had not sufficiently attended to. And so I sincerely believe if we listen to the social science, we've already seen some indicators that we know it's going to be compounded. If you add disadvantage on top of disadvantage, you get double disadvantage or more disadvantage. Maybe the degree is how much more extensive it is that our kids are not doing well on this test. The largest data set on testing, as I know, has already shown that the most economically disadvantaged districts in this country already, on average, the kids score significantly lower than the national median. So since I already know that, reproducing that is less of an interest as a researcher. But let me just be clear. If the standardized tests are going to be there and people families choose to self-select into that, and people and district officials feel that this will be useful to them, I'm not going to emphatically and vociferously oppose it. I just wish that we could put our attention elsewhere in terms of what we know to be working. We're going to need a lot more individualized attention to supporting students. We already know that from some studies.
Mm. Well, Prudence Carter is dean and professor at the Graduate School of Education at the University of California, Berkeley, author of Keeping It Real, School Success Beyond Black and White, and co-editor of Closing the Opportunity Gap, What America Must Do to Give Every Child an Even Chance. Dean Carter, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
And Laura Jimenez, stand by for just a moment. We'll have a lot more about standardized testing and whether the pandemic has offered us an opportunity to rethink what we test for and why we do it. We'll be back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This hour, we're talking once again about the fact that the pandemic is a mirror, right? And so this time we're looking at the reflection that the pandemic mirror has sent back to us about standardized testing in public education in this country and whether this is an opportunity to really think again about what we test for and why we test for it. I'm joined today by Laura Jimenez. She's Director of Standards and Accountability at the Center for American Progress. In a moment, we're going to hear from a superintendent in a New York State public school district. But I want to just share with you a view from a parent, or a retired teacher, I should say. Her name is Seresta Smith, and she is a retired teacher in Miami. A decade ago, she helped found the United Opt Out national movement focused on eliminating the influences, as they say, of corporations in public education, including standardized testing. Now, the group has organized parents from Long Island, New York, all the way to Texas to opt their children out of end of year tests. And she says she was inspired to organize against testing after asked to serve as a literacy coach in a school that had a D grade, according to Florida's accountability system. And she says she was alarmed by the pressures that teachers were put under to teach to the test.
As a national board certified teacher, I was always more interested in building literacy. And that would probably show as a result on any standardized test that you could read and you could write, you know, and you had the skill set, in other words, and you had the thinking skills and you had the creative skills that were developed. Well, there was anything that they came up with that was going to improve these children.
Seresta told us that if policymakers want to figure out which schools need more resources, there are many other data they can collect.
You want to look at social economic levels of the community. You want to look at who are the teachers in the school. Are these teachers predominantly novice teachers, or is there a good mix of novice teachers as well as veteran educators? How many of those teachers in the school are national board certified? What is being offered on the curricular level? How broad are their curricular offerings? What do they have regarding their technology? What is available in the schools? What kind of courses are being offered that utilize technology? the building conditions? Do you have schools that are properly ventilated? Do you have schools that have all the things that you would want inside a school? Do they even have desks that are in decent shape? These are the things they need to start collecting data on. The other one isn't working. 22 years in, we can see it hasn't changed anything.
And Seresta says this year, she finds the assessments, in her words, particularly unhelpful.
You're talking about students that have gone through trauma. You're talking about students who maybe have been sick with COVID themselves. You're talking about all the negative impact of the pandemic, but the expectation is that they can come in and sit for an assessment. So when you're talking about, we want to use these to determine where the needs are, no. I mentioned a bunch of other ways you can determine where the needs are.
That's Seresta Smith, a retired teacher who helped found United Opt Out National, a movement that is focused on eliminating influences of corporations in public education. Well, let's talk to someone who's actually inside schools in a U.S. school district. Lavelle Brown joins us from Ithaca, New York. He's superintendent of the Ithaca City School District in New York and also moderator of Discovery Education's Equity Talks, a weekly webinar with educational leaders. Superintendent Brown, welcome back to the show.
Hello, Magna. It's always a pleasure to speak with you.
We've had you on a couple of times over the past year. So can I first of all just get a quick check-in with you? How's it going?
It's been a challenging year. We're doing well, but it's been changing health data, changing guidance. We're doing everything we can to keep people healthy mentally and physically, but it's been challenging, I must say.
Okay. So, but you have to do... Or have you already done, or you're still looking forward to, not that you might be looking forward to it, or does the district still have to do the standardized test for the state of New York?
Yes, that decision has been made. Our state submitted a waiver. However, that waiver was denied, and we will be administering standardized assessments here in our school district.
And is it the same as what it was in previous years, or is it going to be modified?
We're not doing as many at the secondary level, but the assessments will be very much similar to what we've done in the past.
Okay. So you are running a school district here. I want to know if you think that, let's start with specifically what will be administered to students, if it could yield some useful data about what has happened to kids over the course of the pandemic.
Yeah, and it's important for us to define data. From my perspective, it's going to reveal how much we don't know about young people. There are young people who are getting an A in life right now, who, as I heard one of the speakers earlier speak about, who are so resilient. We have young people, as we're talking about cultivating an anti-racist school district, who are understanding their identities, who are demanding that we change our curriculum. They're demanding that they show up in our curriculum and in our spaces. These standardized assessments don't reveal that. They give us an indication of what we don't do in schools or what we aren't measuring. So when I think about data, I'm looking forward to using this data point to show how poorly our schools are responding to the cultural needs of our young people.
Okay. So that is a really important point, right? Like you kind of only see where you shine the flashlight, right? And so that's what data do. But and I'll come back to that in a second, because I do want to rethink about like what would alternative assessments look like. But Laura Jimenez has made a point a couple of times in this hour, which I think is rather important, that, again, specifically regarding this past year, there's the likelihood that gaps that already existed have gotten much bigger. Don't we need to know that? Don't we need to know how big those gaps have become? Because that's sort of negative momentum that's likely to stay with those students for the rest of their academic careers.
You know, this notion of gaps, it perpetuates a destructive narrative. And us using an assessment to determine gaps and how smart our young people are, or how brilliant they are, is something I hope we can shift from. Again, I'm hoping that we change our approaches to how we know what our young people can do, how many options we give them to show their brilliance. So, yeah, our data has been predictable for generations. I am an African-American male. I have never shown up well in standardized assessment data. And nothing I'm seeing right now with our approaches to state and federal testing is going to reveal anything any different. I do not see my culture in that assessment. My culture is not assessed in that assessment. It's only one way to show what I know, which is not consistent with my cultural background. So yeah, our data is going to be predictable, and I'm hoping we can use this last data point to really spark significant systemic change.
So Laura Jimenez, respond to that, that the tests simply aren't measuring the right things or giving us, in Superintendent Brown's view, an accurate representation of who kids are and what they're learning and what they can do.
Well, I don't think we should pretend that the annual state assessment is a complete measure of what students know and can do, but no assessment is, right? There isn't a magical assessment that will tell you all of those things. We need a wide range of information about how students are doing compared to where we want them to go. But they are one important part of a holistic picture of how students are doing. And frankly, the field just isn't there yet. We don't have really good measures of a wide range of student skills and abilities, and we need to get there.
Mm. So Superintendent Brown, then let's put current constraints aside for a moment and just engage in some wild imagination. Okay, you don't have to give me nitty gritty specifics, but what would a different kind of test or assessment or measure of student progress look like to you?
Well, I'm hoping that we partner with our young people to answer that question. Are we going to give them voice and choice and the ability to show what they know using different modalities? Will it be some kind of narration? Will they have an opportunity to record themselves sharing what they are passionate about? Will they be assessed in different situations and environments? See, all things that our young people are begging for us to allow for them to have in our schools is what I'm hoping we will do. And I'm hoping that we change the narrative. Again, I heard a holistic view of what young people can do is a narrative I'm hoping we change when we think about any particular assessment. I have been judged, my children have been judged, my community has been judged based on a test score, despite our best efforts. So I'm hoping that we not only change a narrative when it comes to assessments and standardized assessments particularly, but we also provide more voice and choice for those who are being assessed. It's time for the oppressors to stop assessing the oppressed and allow for our young people to come forward and build something beautiful.
But so what does that mean, though? I mean, and forgive me for maybe possessing the lack of imagination right now. I just don't understand how we as a society can figure out how to deliver the best to students unless we do some kind of measuring, some kind of assessing. So are you saying to do away with all of that, or just help me understand here?
Again, I heard a speaker earlier speak about the multiple ways to assess. So right now, I think this conversation started with us talking about a multiple choice assessment that was given one time a year.
Mm-hmm.
In our community, that's going to be just another day for students. But there are many, many other. Let's talk about grading practices. Let's talk about the ways in which we take attendance. Let's talk about the ways in which we engage in code of conduct policies. There are many ways school districts each and every day in a much more high stakes way than what we're talking about right now with standardized assessments, much more high stakes, we're assessing young people. And what I'm asking for us to do, those teacher delivered grades we give each day, those teacher administered assessments we give each day, the ways in which we engage with young people, that's how I hope we can begin to assess ourselves. And there are data points that give us an indication about how well we're doing that.
Mm.
All things that are defocusing and decentering this notion of a state individual assessment that's given one time a year.
Mm. Laura Jimenez, this is kind of the fundamental critique we've been hearing, pandemic aside, about standardized testing in public education for a long time. And in truth, for the past 20 years, as we've been doing these standardized tests, for a while, very high stakes accountability was associated with that. Nothing really changed in terms of, I know Superintendent Brown objects to my use of the phrase gaps, but the gaps that the tests were supposed to measure, they did not change. So there was something fundamental about the system that didn't deliver. So, I mean, maybe what he's saying is true. What if we just did away with all of them and completely rethought how we try to understand what's happening in schools?
So that nothing changes is not entirely true. The data doesn't support that. We do know that students, younger students, who have been exposed to more rigorous standards, like those that were adopted in New York, do perform better on the assessments because they have been exposed to those standards for longer periods of time than older students. So we do know that when we raise the learning expectations and we provide the supports for the teachers and the students, students can and do perform better. And that's important to note. But the point about not needing to focus solely on the results of one assessment is well taken, and it is one that I fully support. We need a wide range of high quality assessments that aren't just the paper and pencil or computer based assessments that we know today. We need to develop ways to assess what students know and can do through multiple ways. And frankly, we're just not there yet. We don't have enough investment in how to develop those types of assessment in ways that are free or have much less bias, that are based on rigorous standards, and that can scale, right? Assessments like that take a lot of time and a lot of investment, and we just haven't put in the resources to be able to develop them.
Hmm. Superintendent Brown, we just got a couple minutes left here, and I've got to ask, because I keep coming back to this, because again, the federal government, they exercise power over school districts in a couple of ways. One is by what they require in yes. testing, et cetera, and the other is funding. So let me ask you, I mean, is the Ithaca City School District, has it received federal funding through the pandemic-related legislation? Do you hope to get more?
We hope to get more. We should be receiving some monies, yes. The answer is yes.
Okay. And so that relationship has to work somehow. I mean, how what are you going to tell the federal government about? Here's why we need X amount of dollars. How are they supposed to measure what they should give you?
I'm asking them to trust us, and I'm asking them to believe in the power of humanity and our young people. I must say, we're getting predictable results, and we are not changing. I think it's all by design. If we change the ways in which we assess, we will show the brilliance in a different population of young people who've had that opportunity to show their brilliance before. If I and if my culture is allowed to show our brilliance in the form of an assessment, and it's now the narrative, we won't be talking about gaps and remediation and intervention programs. We'll be talking about equity and opportunities of access. So yes, the federal government, we can be innovative. The money is there. The money has been there for generations. How will we use it? Will we use it to get the results that our system has been designed to get? Or will we use this money to liberate young people who are begging for that emancipation?
Mm. About the federal government trusting you, so I'm looking at census data. The state of New York already spends the most of any state in this nation per pupil, right? So, is that enough? Or, I mean, it sounds like there's a little gap here that I'm not really fully understanding. We just got about 30 seconds. Go ahead.
The money's there. The money's there. The mindset is not.
Gotcha.
When we commit to changing our policies, the things we control locally, and stop getting caught up in a federal one assessment conversation, then we may produce the results that people desire.
That's Luvell Brown. He's superintendent of the Ithaca City School District in Ithaca, New York. He's joined us several times over the past year. Superintendent Brown, thank you as always for being with us.
Thank you. It was an honor.
And Laura Jimenez, Director of Standards and Accountability at the Center for American Progress and former Special Assistant in the Office of Elementary and Secondary Education in the Obama administration. Laura Jimenez, thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.